kicking off today's Snap Judgment episode in the middle of a rescue mission. Snap joins award-winning author, producer, journalist Jake Halpert and his new companions Josh and Lisa in real time, right as they set off to save someone's life.
I can't believe this.
It's surreal.
We're doing this. This is happening.
Yep.
This is happening.
We're good.
0.8 miles. 30 years. 30 years. I had all these visions. I'll go up there. I'll knock on the door. I'll tell him what's what.
Oh, yeah.
I'll ask him where he was. I just want to see him before he's gone.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh my God, I'm going to puke it. Oh.
My hands are
throw
sweating
up all over
so.
Myself.
This is Josh Flanagan and his sister Lisa Prouty. They're at the tail end of a 9-hour road trip from Buffalo, New York to Bloomington, Indiana. And they're about to see their dad, Michael, for the first time in decades.
I don't like it.
Can we turn around? This is his road. I'm turning onto his road.
Okay.
I'm turning onto my father's road.
All right, let's go.
32 years, I'm turning onto his road.
My hands are so sweaty, it's horrible.
Oh my God, is this it? That looks like it from the pictures.
I don't feel so good.
40 feet.
Oh,
oh my God,
he's
sitting outside.
Okay.
Oh my God, that's my father.
Lisa hasn't seen her father in about 20 years. Josh hasn't seen him since he was 5. A few years ago, Josh did track down his phone number. They even talked a few times, but not in person. Then, just recently, Josh had a feeling. He started to get worried that his dad might pass away or disappear, and Josh would never get to see him face to face. So he tracked him down again. He couldn't get his dad on the phone, but eventually he managed to reach a neighbor. And the neighbor had some shocking news. His dad, Michael, was living in his house without water or power, and he was on the verge of death. There was no one there to take care of him. Josh called his sister, Lisa. They got into the car, drove all the way to Bloomington, and arrived in the middle of a rainstorm.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, he looks like he's dying.
Josh, that doesn't even look like
Whoops, I don't want that.
Flanagan?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, I'm recording this. I want to record it. All right, bring it in.
Hi.
I love you.
Wow.
Oh, this is wonderful. Hi.
I can't believe I'm standing in front of you.
Yeah, I know. Me either.
Well, I feel the same way.
And you look different than
you
I
look
thought.
Really
I don't know.
Yeah.
You're smaller than I thought.
Yeah.
And my memories, you were much taller than me.
Well, in your memories, I wore boots a lot.
Yeah, and I was 5, so.
You have to understand, I didn't know how I would feel when I saw you.
I do understand.
But
I just hate it that you come to my home after all this time, and I have practically nothing.
We didn't come to see.
That's not the point.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I understand how you must feel. But we had some ideas to kind of help out with you.
I'll tell you this. I never forgot how much I love you. Never. But I had a law. You don't take children away from their mothers.
Right.
Josh and Lisa weren't ready to start digging up the past with their dad. They were too busy looking around at the rundown house where Michael was living. There was no power, water, heat, or AC. Feral cats roamed in and out, and the smell of mildew and rotting food was overpowering.
Dad, you understand that, you know, pretty soon you can't stay here, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, because that's why we want to find you a place to live, so that we don't have to worry about you, okay?
Well, listen, you got to get some rest. I mean, I'd keep you here all night.
I know.
It's okay.
Know.
We're going to come see you in the morning.
Bring it in.
Group hug.
Really
fantastic. Love you.
Bye, Dad.
I can't believe I'm going to pull away and leave him here, you know?
He's just itty-bitty. Why is he so tiny?
I don't want to leave him there. I have a heart beating in my chest. He's another human being. And I really, really felt the connection to him. That's my dad. And I'm not saying he's earned that title. But it is my dad.
So, I mean, we'll see what we can do tomorrow. You know, probably what we'll just do is we'll do that in the morning.
Josh and Lisa haven't actually known each other for very long, just 2 months. They're two of Michael's 10 estranged children from 6 different marriages. Growing up, Josh and Lisa's only real connection to their father were the books of poetry that he had written. Other than this, it was mostly guessing about who this man was and why he wasn't there. When I talked to them that night, after they finally met their dad, they appear to be in a mild state of shock. They don't know what to do, or whether this man, whom they suddenly rediscovered, even deserves their help.
But it's like we have to choose now. Which side of this are we going to take?
Explain. I mean, this is a guy who's been absent from your lives, your entire lives. I mean, how...
You know what? There's nothing about this guy that I want to like, and I liked him.
Yeah, you don't want to like him, but you can't help it. He's just this cute little old man. Looks like a little old fisherman guy.
30 plus years. There's no reason that we should not have had contact. If he would have called me at any time in those years, I would have talked to him.
Are you on the same page? Are you clear in your... Are you each clear in your own mind what you're prepared to do for him at this point?
It's tough. It's tough. I don't think he has any food. Like, I don't think he is eating. I don't think so either. I think that he was literally sitting there waiting to die. I don't have room to care for him because I don't know him, and he's never done anything for me or cared for me or shown me anything. You know, the damage that's done not having a father figure. But there's no way you can look at any person and not feel for the fact that this person is penniless, homeless, and alone. And what do you do in that situation?
The next morning, I go with Josh and Lisa to the abandoned house where Michael is living. When we arrive, Michael is sitting on a plastic lawn chair out front. He has a bushy gray beard, and he's wearing a heavy plaid shirt and a White Sox cap. Michael seems overjoyed, though he's so frail that he has a hard time standing up to greet us.
Okay. This is Jake. Jake, this is Michael.
Nice to meet you, Michael.
Glad to meet you.
Can we go in the house for a few minutes?
Sure.
That'd be all right?
It'd be fine. In fact, I wanted to take you in.
Oh, awesome.
Remember, there's no electricity, so the inside of Michael's house is dim and gloomy. Much of the place looks like a forgotten storage depot for an art gallery. Michael is a painter, poet, and sculptor. He was never famous or made much money from it, but he's devoted his entire life to his artwork. The walls are covered with Michael's paintings, and in the corners they're stacked a dozen deep. Some of Michael's pieces are strikingly beautiful, like a series of stones that he's painted with an iridescent enamel. Despite the squalor, the inside of the house is a wonderland of artistic creations.
Wow.
And there's another one.
Oh my God, I like remember that.
Wow.
I remember that picture.
That's beautiful.
What's the story with this?
Let me tell you something, at least in my philosophy. Art belongs to you until you finish it and you let someone else see it. And it doesn't belong to you anymore.
Yeah. I agree.
And that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, one of my great prides is my children. But I don't own them. I just tried to raise them.
I know there's been a period of separation between you and Josh and Lisa Marie. What's your hope for where things might go from here now that you've been...
They're already fine. There was never really a separation. It was just geographic and chronological. Those children and I loved each other from the day they were born. And decades later, when they came back, we loved each other just as much.
So, Michael, you clearly consider yourself to be a good father.
That's like asking water if it's wet. Yeah, I wasn't a perfect father, but that had more to do with my profession. I just didn't have a choice sometimes.
In the house, Josh and Lisa look around, mesmerized. It's as if they're both surprised, relieved, even a little joyful that something beautiful has come from their father's absence.
It's kind of amazing to me because in some ways the poetry is almost like a stand-in for him in some ways.
When he was absent and I could read that, I felt like he was talking to
That's
me.
That's what I found.
Who is that?
It's me and my mom.
Josh.
Jacqueline.
Yeah, she was kind of a hottie, huh?
Ew, Josh, ew.
Yeah, it's your mom, not mine. She was pretty. My mom said she was beautiful.
So, six wives, though? What happened? How did why so many?
I'm no dead.
The beach.
I'll put it away so it doesn't get wrecked.
That's what happened. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm still working. My wife comes downstairs and asks when I'm coming to bed. I look at her and say, I'm working. Never get in the way of the work. The rule always in my households was we do the work.
Michael always put his artwork first, before his kids. And yet the kids themselves appear in the poems. One of his poems is about Lisa, after her mother had taken her to California.
Michael, at some point, might I get you to read Gifts to Lisa Marie?
Of course.
Can you give me a little bit of a background before you read the poem, of what inspired it, or...
Never explain a poem.
Okay, fair enough.
Presents for Lisa Marie. 1 dozen pine cones, still green and just picked from the tree, and some although there'll probably be dust by the time they reach California. This is after her mother had taken her to California. Presents for Lisa Marie. A geography lesson, a bouquet of autumn from a place that still has seasons, a slap in the face to California's sameness and the distances between us, with no apologies or reasons saved these two. I miss you so badly. I cannot bear to write or send the photographs you've asked for. 2, I'd slap the face of God if I thought he was what keeps me from you. But I don't blame God or anyone anymore. There'll be no autumn celebration this year for me. Celebrations are for free men. And I won't be that till I hold you in my arms again. It's autumn, Lisa. And I am like the tree. Love, Daddy.
Sorry, Daddy.
It's a tough one. Okay, if it's possible, don't forget my cigarettes. I'm going to have to figure out what I'm going to do next.
Well, we're going to go to the office. You were going to go change clothes.
Oh.
Right.
Josh and Lisa are on a particular mission to get Michael someplace safe. But neither of them is willing to take him home. And it's not just because he was an absentee father. Both Josh and Lisa remember him being actually violent. Lisa told me in private about an incident seared into her memory from childhood.
I remember hearing all the noise in the apartment, and there's like banging of pots and pans and stuff. And then I ran out there, and he hit my mom in the head with the recorder, and I know it broke. And she was holding her head, and she told me to go back in my room. And I stood in the corner, and I heard him yell that if I didn't stop crying, that he was going to keep me. So I stopped crying. I was real quiet.
Josh and Lisa both tell me that confronting Michael about the past would sabotage their mission. Because if they did, Michael might become hostile and closed off. So they smile and nod, even as Michael continues to justify his absence in their lives with his own version of history.
In his mind, he's like world's greatest dad.
Yeah, he is quite convinced of that. That's true. I would like to note that even though I call him dad, I have a dad. Yeah. Much of this is I need to get him to safety. You know, if I were to come in here and be business and not call him dad, he's not going anywhere.
I'm playing up the compassion a little bit to give him hope. There are parts of me that want to lash out at him, and I'm squashing those, and I'm being more affectionate than I might otherwise be.
But for right now, I just want him to be safe.
But I am.
He's
I
not
think,
safe where he's living.
I think he wants to come home with us.
Well, I'm sure he does. You know,
he's not going to come to a head at some point, or?
Well, we're going to find out.
Yeah.
After some coaxing, Josh and Lisa manage to get Michael in the car, and they start driving around Bloomington looking for some place that will take him in. For the time being, Michael seems unworried about where we're going, and instead he regales me with stories about his younger days as an artist. He talks about palling around with Ginsberg and Kerouac.
Jack and Kerouac said, "Stay pure, man. Always stay pure."
He talks about his poetry and the standing ovations he received at readings. It's hard to know what to believe. Over the course of the day at various social service organizations, Lisa tries her best to explain the urgency and the absurdity of her situation.
I don't really see... Let's try that entrance over there.
Do you think that he's still holding on to the hope that if he goes through the motions of all this, he'll somehow end up going back to Western New York with you guys?
I'm thinking that, yeah, I think that he has like a small hope of that. And I think he also is under the impression somehow or another I'm going to stay with him. Because he asked me in the house, he said if he could only ask me one thing, he'd ask if I stayed with him and if I'd just stay with him until he dies. Hi. We were just at the FSSA, and they said they're to take my father to the Bloomington Hospital and that there's also a nursing home there that they can put him in. This is exhausting, and we're getting nowhere.
Yeah.
In the end, it becomes apparent that the only real option is dropping Michael off at the City Mission, which is basically the local homeless shelter. And as this possibility dawns on Michael, he looks fidgety, a little scared. He starts asking what the plan is.
I'm just curious about the facility I'm going to be at tonight.
Well, that's the mission that you talked to, right? That's the one?
Right.
That you had talked to with the neighbor about?
Todd?
Yeah.
Right, and I called them and talked to them twice. Myself.
As everyone gets back into the car to head to the City Mission, the mood becomes tense. It's a late spring afternoon and heavy storm clouds have rolled in. For the first time all day, Michael's totally quiet. It's as if suddenly he's accepting the possibility that his children really might leave him. Minutes later, we're arriving at the City Mission. It's a small place. There's a mess hall on the first floor with a few tiny windows. The floors are spotless. It feels like army barracks,
except
for a radio that's playing pop music.
Oh, I called earlier and they said we could check him in between 5 and 7.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Who are you checking in?
Our dad, Michael.
Oh, okay, sure, that's not a problem.
Thank you.
How you doing, Dad?
My name's
Al. I'm a chaplain here.
Oh, thank
I'm Michael.
You.
Pleased to meet you, Michael.
I'm Lisa.
Lisa, God bless you. Good
thank
to see you.
This is Jake. My brother, Josh.
Josh.
Hello, Josh.
This is our friend, Jake. He's...
I'm doing a story for okay. Public Radio.
Yeah. Oh, okay, for yeah. NPR. All right, good. Well, have you had any alcohol in the last 24 hours?
No.
Good. Okay. You passed first base. We got to still go to second and third, but you're okay. I'll need a picture ID.
Got it. He's got it.
And yeah, and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
And this is his stuff.
Michael's the oldest guy there by a solid 20 years. The other residents look like hard cases, quiet, sullen young men whose lives, for one reason or another, have hit rock bottom. At this point, Michael looks freaked out. The cockiness that he seemed to exude earlier in the day is entirely gone. He seems close to tears, and he keeps asking whether he's going to be able to walk around at night.
I mean, remember, this is the hard part.
Above all, he doesn't want to be locked in.
It's not difficult to be here unless you have a specific problem, you know.
I have a problem.
I understand
my
that.
Anxiety
yeah.
level.
Okay.
That I'm very claustrophobic, and if I'm shut mm-hmm. in someplace, I go nuts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I hate to say this, but there is a possibility maybe this is not for him. It's a decision you're going to have to make, but...
Let me talk to him for a minute.
Yeah.
Come here, Dad.
It's my anxiety that I feel going nuts already.
I'm not positive he'll stay here tonight.
It's so clear he has a really high sense of himself and his importance in the world, and it's come to this, in this, like, homeless shelter in Bloomington, Indiana.
He doesn't want rules, he wants to be free, but... If you want to be free, you have to be a responsible man and live your life in a way that you set yourself up for that in your later years. And that's clearly not the case here.
I just feel bad, but he'll be okay.
Finally, Michael agrees to stay, well, at least for one night. And so, after a lifetime of being abandoned by their dad, Josh and Lisa prepare to leave him, alone, in a tiny homeless shelter on the outskirts of town.
Okay. All right, you ready?
Love you.
We're very proud of you.
Yep. Love my kids.
We love you too, Dad. Okay.
We'll talk soon.
Just as we leave, the clouds, which had steadily been getting darker, explode into a rainstorm. And so, when it finally comes time for us to go, Josh, Lisa, and I all have to bolt out the door and sprint for the car. It's impossible to see Michael or even the building that housed the city mission. It all just kind of vanished in a watery blur.
That story was produced by Jake Halpern, the production assistants from Anna Sussman and Anna Adlerstein.